The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke.
Glory to you, O Lord.
Some Sadducees, those who deny that there is a resurrection, came forward and put this question to Jesus, saying, "Teacher, Moses wrote for us, if someone's brother dies leaving a wife but no child, his brother must take the wife and raise up descendants for his brother. Now there were seven brothers. The first married a woman but died childless. Then the second and the third married her, and likewise all the seven died childless. Finally, the woman also died. Now at the resurrection, whose wife will that woman be? For all seven had been married to her." Jesus said to them, "The children of this age marry and remarry, but those who are deemed worthy to attain to the coming age and to the resurrection of the dead neither marry nor are given in marriage. They can no longer die, for they are like angels, and they are the children of God, because they are the ones who will rise. That the dead will rise, even Moses made known in the passage about the bush, when he called out, 'Lord, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob.' And he is not the God of the dead, but of the living. For to him all are alive." The Gospel of the Lord. Evangelii dicta de leonto nostra licta. Our first reading today has the Maccabees, right? The Jewish people who were rebelling against the, not just the oppression, the conquering of their nation by the Greeks by Alexander the Great, and then the successor kingdoms after Alexander the Great. They were rebelling not just against that sort of political oppression, but against the religious oppression they were receiving. Right? The Greeks were saying not just, "Well, we're in charge, you're part of our empire now, but you need to conform to how we live. You need to adopt our values. You need to live like we live." And a lot of the Jewish people kind of went along with that. They started participating in all sorts of untoward things and disregarding God's law, or trying to live in this sort of syncretic manner. Syncretism is this error of thinking, well, I can kind of hold different things in parallel, right? I can privately have my own faith, but like publicly behave differently. Right? Privately, I do this. Publicly, I do that. Or, I believe what I believe. You believe what you believe. And, we all just kind of get along because we all just kind of all, believe what we believe. And we just don't step on each other's toes. And eventually, the Greeks insisted. It wasn't just this seduction of this pagan culture. It eventually became mandatory. It eventually became enforced. And anyone who knows how tyrants work, of course that's what happened. Of course they started by trying to seduce people by making their ideas seem new and developed and shiny. And then when not everyone kowtowed, they enforced it. And then they enforced it worse and worse and worse until we get to this point where they're outright torturing and killing people for refusing. Especially in today's first reading, making them eat pork in violation of God's law. And you might think, it's just a little bit of pork. And to the degree that you and I look at that story and say, I don't get it. It's just a little bit of pork. It's to the degree that we have given in. We have become syncretists. Right? It's like, well, it's just a little, okay, it's just a little religious scruple. It's not even like thou shalt not kill, right? This is one of those components of the law of Moses that honestly seems a bit arbitrary. And as Christians, we obviously know, okay, well, the law of Moses passed away anyway, so it doesn't matter. But at the time, the law of Moses was in force. It was wrong for God's people to violate the smallest bit of his law. Even if they didn't understand it, that God said so, that I am the Lord, that was the reason, that should have been good enough. We now know, of course, and they knew kind of at the time as well, that the purpose of the law of Moses was to make them different, to set them apart, to make them his beacon to the world, so that everyone would look toward Jerusalem and the one God and recognize there is no God but the Lord. And so, yes, it's just a bit of pork, but the thing is that that little bit of pork is what set them apart. It's one of the many things that set them apart. And besides, it's really not about the pork. Just like any cultural tyrants, it's not about the knee, it's not about the bending, it's about the making. For those who want you to bend the knee, it's about the making. It's about the power itself. Cultural tyrants will use and discard the groups that they're trying to appeal to. Again, look out into the real world, look out into history. There's plenty of corrupt people who will appeal to those who can support them, so long as the people can support them and give them power. And the minute that's not going to work anymore, they turn to another group. Says, well, then you support me, because it's about the power. It's not really about the content. But for those for whom truth is about the content, for those who recognize that what the nature of truth is and the will of God is for them, even the smallest little bit of their pork is a bridge too far. Christians had the same experience. The Romans were very syncretic. The Romans would conquer all sorts of countries and say, okay, we'll just fold your gods into our pantheon. You guys can worship your god in your little area. And just so long as you recognize that there's the Roman pantheon, you guys can be what's called henotheists. Monolatrists. I think it's henotheists. You can have your own god. You can have your god. Yeah, you can have your own religion. But so long as you understand that it's like your religion, but it fits, it's in this kind of compatible kind of mishmash of the Roman state religion. And, you know, yeah, you have to then participate in the Roman state religion from time to time, right? Sure. And, you know, so that's how a lot of the Romans looked at Christ. Like, okay, this Jesus Christ character, okay, I guess there's this sect that worships this Jesus Christ fellow. But so long as they burn their incense to the emperor like any good citizen, okay, whatever. But Christians wouldn't burn the incense. They wouldn't burn even a pinch of the incense. They wouldn't venerate the image of the emperor. Oh, come on, it's just a little bit of incense. You know, just, and really, it's the state religion stuff. It's not like we really take it too terribly seriously. The point is that it binds us together. It helps the Roman society. It helps us to be Romans together. That's really the point. Just pinch the incense. Think about Jesus while you're pinching the incense. Just do it, though. It's just a little pinch of incense, guys. And the Christians said no. And they were willing to be martyred over a pinch of incense. Because it's not about the knee, it's not about the bending, it's about the making. It's about the compromising the truth. It's about, if you're making an exclusive claim to truth, any assault on the truth, no matter how small, is an assault on the entirety of the truth. Just as for the Maccabees, anyone who breaks the smallest bit of the law of Moses is guilty of the whole law of Moses being violated. It's the Jewish understanding of their law. How much more with the new covenant, the new law of Christ? Jesus Christ, who is the Word incarnate, who is God's own self-expression. It's like, well, just, okay, but different people believe different things. Can't we just all get along? Take a little pinch of incense. No. Because to take even a little pinch of incense, to find a way too clever by half, or presumptuously think, well, God would want me to continue on, so God will be okay if I just, you know, insincerely burn the incense. Or so long as I just play the game. Just play the game for now so that they won't bother you. The Christians understood, no, things mean things. Stuff means stuff. We are a sacramental people. We recognize that stuff means stuff. Everything is charged with meaning, especially down in those early days when a lot of people were baptized as adults, right? They were, you know, baptized in the middle of night at the Easter Vigil, right? This is before electric lighting, right? And the night was cold and the night was dark and there were wild animals out there. And so they had and then they understood there was a spiritual reality as well. So they understood that the cold and the dark, it represented something deeper than just it being physically cold and dark outside. Coldness and darkness, it's representative, it's symbolic of the prince of this world and his darkness and sin. And the last thing every Christian did was baptized as an adult. Last thing every Christian did before he turned toward the light, turned the lit church and into the baptistry, do you reject Satan and all his works and all his empty promises? But it wasn't just this kind of, do you reject Christ? Do you reject Satan and all his works and all his empty promises? I do. Do you believe in God the Father Almighty? I do. They had them turn and look out into the darkness of night and essentially ask them that, and then ask them that question. The last thing every Christian had to do before he assented to made his assent to faith in Christ and was baptized was essentially to spit in the devil's eye, symbolically. Because things have meaning. And so when the Romans came and said, just pinch the incense, just burn a little bit of the incense, they'd say no, because that isn't an empty gesture. Oh, it doesn't mean much. It does, you know, and I know this means something. And I will not participate. Not a nibble of their pork, not a pinch of their incense. So too, in every age, so too today. I'm thinking times between then and now, right? You have St. Thomas More, right, who says, I'm the king's good servant, but God's first. And he was willing to die for that. Saying, I will not assent to the king's violation of the nature of marriage. I am not going to do it. And the violation of the nature of the church. I'm not going to do it. Oh, just sign it, but don't mean it. My signature means something. My assent means something. But today, cultural pressures that, like, you know, just look, you have the freedom of worship. People who describe our, you know, in the civil realm, people who describe that fundamental right that we have, which is pre-political, it's something recognized. It's not like one of the genius things about our American legal system, right, is that we recognize you have your rights. We don't grant you them. We recognize that these rights are pre-political, right? So say you have but those who will describe your right as, oh, you have the freedom of worship. No, I have the freedom of religion. And that's to live completely in accord with my conscience. Not just in here, but here too. With my actions, with my words, public and private. That's what I have the right to. And I have the responsibility to do it too, because rights never exist without responsibilities. I have the responsibility, really, it's better to say that, I have the responsibility to live whole, to live in truth, to live in perfect continuity at all times with what I know to be true and good and beautiful. And therefore, society must, not decides to, not chooses to, but must, if it's not going to be tyrannical, respect that. Oh, I know, but just, you know, there's other things, other people. You're stepping on someone else's toes. You saying no might make someone feel sad. You think about your cases throughout, right? Throughout, you know, this last few decades, right? Oh, just make the stupid bouquet. Bake the stupid cake. Come on, it doesn't mean anything. Yes, it does. And you know it means something. Otherwise, you wouldn't be hunting around to make people do it. Oh, it's just a little thing. It's just, you know, we're a pluralistic society and we all have to get along. You know, and I know, that's not why you're asking for this. I know all of your motives are ulterior. We both know this. Let's not play this game. No. Not a pinch of your incense. Look, it's a matter of politeness. People just, people have nicknames, people have names. People make up their own grammar. You know, just like, look, just call the boy a girl. I know you don't think that for some reason, because I don't think, whatever, but just, you know, just say the boy's a girl. Just say it. Just say it. Just pretend. Even if you don't believe it. I actually want you to believe it. And if you cave on what I'm telling you, it's just a little thing. I'm going to keep on pressing until you believe it and believe it from your heart, because it's not about the knee. It's not about the bending. It's about the making. Oh, just do it. Just go along with it. It's such a simple thing to make someone feel good. It's to make someone... You're mean, in fact. You're cruel. You're doing violence to somebody if you do not play this game. If you do not burn this incense, if you do not nibble this little bit of pork. Even if that wasn't a lie. Even if those children that people are so gleefully mutilating are just as miserable after they're mutilated. Even if that wasn't the case. Even if it was... On a purely societal level, everything was sunshine and rainbows after you played that game. As Christians, we would still say no because it's not true. Not a pinch of the incense, not a nibble of the pork. We don't do that with this glee and this hatred and this the sort of glee and the hatred and going out of our way to do it like maybe... Some of our detractors might say, no, we do it with joy and confidence, saying, no, what is true and what is good and what is beautiful means something. And so in every smallest part of my life, in every word, in every action, I choose God over what this world wants me to do. Because the world has no right to ask me to violate the law of God. It wouldn't have the right to ask me to violate the law of God if the law of God was merely arbitrary. Much less does it have the freedom or have the right to tell me to violate the law of God when I believe in He who is, the great I am, the one who is the origin and purpose and condition of all that exists, who is the Logos. The explanation for the rationality behind the universe, such that to turn away from him is to turn away from reality, is to turn away from the God who is to turn away from and live in fantasy. No, so we do so with joy, knowing that what is true and good and beautiful is true and good and beautiful for everybody. And knowing that our witness then, they might say, oh, you're just being stubborn, being mean. No, I'm not. Maybe I'm being stubborn, but I'm stubborn for a good reason. But I'm not being mean. I just love you more than to lie to you. I love you more than to play this game. You're a stranger. Christ says, love your enemies. Love your neighbor. Love even your enemies. Well, if you want to make yourself my enemy, I will love you enough to not play your game. Because what you are offering, it's like the St. Benedict mental prayer, right? Begone, Satan, do not suggest vain things to me. The cup you offer me is poison. Drink it yourself. Maybe not the drink it yourself bit, but just go away. I care more than to pretend that what you are presenting me is in any way good. I know it can be hard because there's a lot of pressure from our world. Right? Your little kid, your grandchild, your child might come up and talk about like, well, okay, yeah, I don't know how I feel today. Do I feel like a girl or boy? Well, I don't care how you feel. That's silly. Who told you that? Your teacher? Your teacher lied to you. Sorry. Don't believe that. That's false. You don't need to be like, you go there and tell her. And you're no, just like, no, that's not true. That's silly. That doesn't make sense. That's not even pretend. That's just not real. But do so with soul charity, with joy, with confidence, with faith and hope, not anger and spite. Knowing that the world to come is not just the endless continuation of this world. And that's what our gospel is about today. The world to come is not just a mere continuation of this world forever. Heaven is not endless Mai Tais and golf in the afternoon or something, or whatever you want to do. I guess Mai Tais and golf really aren't my thing either. But you get my idea. Like, it's not an eternal pleasure palace. It's not a chance, oh, I get to do all the fun things I wasn't allowed to do because of God, because of my religion in this world. That's not what it's about. No. Our hope is for God himself. Our hope is for the resurrection. Our hope is for glory. And it's not this kind of pie in the sky, I believe in fairies sort of hope. It's a real hope. Faith is knowledge of things unseen, not a desperate clinging to something you know not to be true, but you hold to it anyway, kind of pop culture faith. That's not what faith is. Faith is apprehension, in your intellect being recognizing the goodness and the truth of things unseen, things beyond our senses, though revealed, and so more real, more certain, more truth. Your eyes can lie to you. Illusions happen. You can mishear something. The revelation of God is certain. And then you turn on your will, you orient your will, and you reach out in hope. Knowing that regardless of what this world may throw at you, your hope is in God. And that one day faith and hope will pass away. Faith and hope will be gone in eternity because there will only be charity. There will only be love. There will only be resting in the goodness of God itself, of himself. Because faith and hope are orienting and reaching toward the future. In eternity, there's no change. It's an eternal now. Utterly unlike this world, and yet in perfect continuity, like all things of God, in perfect continuity, radically transformed like the seed to the tree, but in perfect continuity. If we have that sort of faith, if we have that sort of hope, if we have that sort of joy, if that is our reason for adhering so firmly and unshakingly to what is true and good and beautiful, it'll utterly confound those who hate truth and goodness and beautiful, those who see only power. It'll be as incomprehensible as the Greeks torturing the Maccabees. Right? The Maccabees putting out their hands and saying, yeah, chop my hands off, tear my tongue out. What do I care? I receive these from God and I know I'm going to get them back. As I said on All Saints Day, what's the worst thing the world can do to us? Make us, cause us to imitate our Lord? We know what happened to him. We know death couldn't hold him. So no. Not a single pinch, not a single grain of their incense. We belong to Jesus Christ, the one and only Lord.